With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, my name's Stuart Miles and welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast. Nothing, the new brand that promises to deliver more than its namesake, has released its first product this week, the Nothing Ear One. A pair of active noise cancelling earbuds with a transparent design so you can see what's inside. But can Carl Pei, the man who created OnePlus and created Nothing, deliver a second time around? Pocket Lint's Cam Bunton has been following the news and is here to tell us more. Meanwhile, I've been talking to the Global Director of Gaming Partnerships at Huawei to find out just how important gaming is to the company and whether we could see a dedicated gaming phone from them in the future. And finally, Pocalin editor Chris Hall has been driving the new Mercedes EQA electric car. What's it like to drive? Well, stay tuned to find out more. But first, back to you, Cam. Nothing to see here, or is that just a bad joke that we should be getting over?
A little bit of a bad joke, isn't it? I mean, immediately as soon as the company announced the name, you knew the jokes and the puns were all just going to come flooding in. And I think they'll continue for a while yet. But the concept of these new earbuds is actually quite interesting because they're entering a market that's already very saturated, has been growing really quickly over the last few years. We've seen so many brands come out with new buds, so they had to do something a bit different, and they did. So it should be interesting to see how well they're adopted by normal people.
And that seems to be my first question. Obviously, the earbud, market was there were lots of people dallying around in it. Then Apple came out with the AirPods, the first AirPods. They took the world by storm. Everybody complained about the polar design. It was these white things hanging from your ears and all the other stuff, and yet 3 or 4 years later, we've suddenly, it feels like we're seeing an earbud launch every week almost.
Yeah.
What's Nothing got that nobody else has? That, what's going to make them stand out from the crowd? Because surely a transparent design isn't going to be enough.
I think that from a looks perspective, I think it's important to realize where they sit in terms of price. They're a £99 pair of earphones. And when you look at all the other sort of devices that are in that price category, they're all kind of bland, boring plastic things that are generally white. Most of them will be AirPod lookalikes. So I think that the image and making them look different is actually quite important when you're looking at that side of the market. So making them transparent, making them not look like anything else, I think was a big part of the appeal and will be, I think.
Now, this is Carl Pei's second company. His first, obviously, as I mentioned in the intro, OnePlus. That's done all right.
Yeah, OnePlus haven't done bad.
Are they taking any tactics here? It's not like invite only or something crazy like that, is it?
No, but you can sort of see the sort of the influence, the OnePlus style marketing and stuff in the run up to the launch. They did sort of like a limited drop on StockX, which is normally a site where you'll find rare limited edition sneakers like Air Jordan 1s in a specific color or collaboration. And so they dropped the first 100 serialized Nothing buds on StockX, sorry. And I think the number one pair, the serial 1 out of 50 or whatever they had, sold for about $1,000 or something crazy. So they're sort of creating that exclusivity with the name and the branding and trying to appeal to that kind of customer.
Now, they've obviously started with earbuds. Are we likely to see other products? Are we like transparent over ear headphones, or is it just a headphones company? Is it going to be, OnePlus phone, a Nothing phone eventually?
I mean, we could. I mean, what they've said all along is that they've set up the company because Carl Pei's long-term vision, what he said, is to have an ecosystem of devices that blends seamlessly into the background. And it's something we've probably heard multiple times from multiple different companies. So it's not an earbuds company. It's a tech company, but they just started off with earbuds. I think it seemed like the best place for them to go because the market's growing so fast at the moment. It was an interesting place to enter. But they did. They bought out Essential. I don't know if you remember that company. They released
Essential Phone.
The Essential Phone. Yeah, well, they've bought that company. They own all the patents and everything that that company held. So there's no reason why they can't launch a smartphone at some point in the future.
And the final question on the transparency, sometimes when we've seen things that are a bit more transparent, or, you know, like Porsche always makes their disc brake colors like lime green and things like that to really stand out, don't they? Have they done anything like this? Is there like some crazy colors, or is it just a bit of green circuit board?
No, it's not. I mean, it's all very, very minimal. So from the outside, you don't see the circuit board as such. It's only when you turn it onto the inside you see it, but all the little components are very neatly placed, and they have to be, because if they weren't precise, they would look kind of ugly. But no, there's nothing fancy like that. There's a very much a minimal approach to the design. They actually work together with a company called Teenage Engineering, who make these really sort of minimal white audio products like synthesizers and the like. So it's very much that sort of Scandinavian minimalist style, rather than here, let me show you a bright, flashy brake disc approach.
Still to come, Chris gives us his verdict on the Mercedes EQA electric car.
And you can change these to be whatever you want, scrolling through the different elements, you know, and you've got lots and lots of options, lots of information. It's all very rich and looks fantastic.
Alexandra Salem is the Global Director of Gaming Partnerships at smartphone maker Huawei. With some of the biggest games moving to mobile, are the company keen to make flagship smartphones prime to play them? He's certainly got his work cut out. I recently caught up with him to see what the trends the company is seeing, how 5G has the potential to change the way we play, and whether the company will ever create a dedicated gaming phone for those that want more. I started by asking just how popular gaming on the Huawei App Gallery actually is.
So we launched App Gallery, our Huawei App Store, 3 years ago out of China. And since then, we've observed and experienced an exponential growth across genres and geographies. So we have today a catalog of more than 20,000 games, which are spanning a very wide spectrum of genres. So we offer games from, you know, very hyper-casual genres such as Voodoo, to casual, with, for example, the Playrix catalog, to midcore, to really more strategy, hardcore games. And we've been able, over just 3 years, to ramp up our efforts to become a top three app store, to bring more innovation and competition in apps distribution.
And presumably, because of your job title, gaming is pretty important to Huawei.
No, definitely. We are the number one vertical in terms of revenue and downloads on the platform.
And is that, what studios are you working with? Is it kind of, is everybody on board?
Yeah, so basically our value proposition is to bring games for every segment of players. So we tried hard to bring a diversified portfolio catalog of games to the platform, and we have managed to attract, for example, Playrix, which is one of the biggest gross booking generator historically in terms of games. This was like a very strong symbol of trust for a relatively new platform like ours. And, you know, gaming is a very mimetic kind of vertical where a lot of developers and publishers look at the top of the rankings, and they try to mimic every single move by the likes of King or Playrix. And after we managed to convince leading developers such as Gameloft or Playrix or Wargaming to join App Gallery, we've seen like a very strong kind of momentum. And we've been contacted in the last 12 months by dozens of major developers who want to be part of the game, because they realize also that they have suffered from a lack of competition in apps distribution in the last 12, 13 years, because it was basically concentrated within a monopoly. Mm. And what we are offering, similar to other third-party stores, is basically more competition. And I think everyone understands it's in the best interest of developers, but also users, gamers.
And you talk about games there, you know, certain popular games and things like that. What are the key trends that you're seeing in mobile gaming at the moment?
So one key trend that I am observing is definitely the emergence of 5G. On the devices side, we see more and more models which are called 5G ready, being that there is a technology within the device to run on 5G networks. Mm-hmm. On the other side, we have dozens of countries which have now 5G networks, infrastructure. So this means very concretely for a gamer that you can have access to better, richer, more immersive gaming experiences. You can stream more quickly. So it means that also watching esports videos is becoming a better experience, and you also have like less of lag in terms of gaming, so less latency, which means that the gaming experience becomes overall much better. Another trend that I am observing with a lot of attention and interest is also the fact that we are going from actually a siloed industry where basically developers were delivering games for a given platform, mobile or console or PC, and we are going from that siloed world into a world where basically developers generate a holistic experience as frictionless as possible across devices. The best example for me is Fortnite. You can start playing, you know, while commuting in the tube, and you arrive home, you continue playing on your PC or your console or your tablet, and this changes completely the way of interacting with games. And last but not least, I think an interesting trend that I also love observing is how gaming is nowadays much more than the simple interaction between a player and a game. We tend to think of games of gaming as just this experience of playing a game, but nowadays the market, the ecosystem of gaming is way larger. For example, we've seen like dozens of very successful in-game concerts in the last few years. For example, in Roblox or Minecraft, we see people taking meetings from the games they love. I have a few colleagues who attend meetings from within Fortnite.
Wow. Brings a whole new world to the weekly sort of sales reports, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Venture capitalists tend to be fans of this kind of morphing of gaming and meeting. We also see, of course, an emergence of gaming-related videos. So on YouTube, for example, 20% of watch time stems from gaming content. And you even have like some of the, you know, of the grammar, some of the features of gaming which are replicated within other forms of entertainment. I am thinking, for example, of TV and cinema, which are leveraging more and more the franchises coming from the gaming world. But even more interestingly, you have Black Mirror, the TV show of Netflix, which allowed in one of their episodes the viewer to make choices which have ramifications on the rest of the scenario of the movie. And this is like a pure feature of gaming, where you have this kind of interactive relationship between the player and the content which is being used.
And so you talk there, one of your first things was saying obviously the rise of 5G, and you know, Qualcomm and others are telling us that 5G is here, it's now, and you can start to see that with the devices and that are coming out. Certainly, you know, it used to be flagships and now it's kind of, you know, an everyman phones as well. Do you feel that developers are, you know, are already taking advantage of that new capability, or do you think that's still to come?
So I think there is one platform where 5G is already completely taken into account and really central. It is cloud gaming. I personally believe that cloud gaming might be the equivalent of the iPhone moment in 2007, meaning the creation of a new platform which will make affordability and accessibility of games much larger. And 5G basically is one of the key drivers to make cloud gaming possible. For the audience who are not familiar with the, cloud gaming, you can think of it as a kind of Netflix for games, meaning you pay typically, you know, a monthly subscription, and you have suddenly access to a huge catalog of games that you can try and play without having to buy every single time a new title. And one of the requirements for this to work properly in terms of bandwidth and in terms of lag and latency is to have like 5G networks which are operating with 5G devices.
Yeah.
And developers are developing basically on the premise that 5G is going to be rolled out in the next few months. So this is a platform where basically 5G is not only considered, it's like a sine qua non condition for the success of the platform itself.
Now, a lot of the app stores, you know, from iOS or Google Play or whatever, have been kind of reticent to allow cloud gaming services to kind of roll out on their platforms for fear of losing control and things like that. Do you think something would we ever see Xbox Games Pass on the Huawei App Gallery, for example?
Listen, I think what characterizes App Gallery is that we are always willing to listen to the feedback of the community of players and developers. So we are still in very early days of cloud gaming. There are so many uncertainties. We've seen some of our competitors launching offerings which have had like mixed reviews. So our position is to wait and see and to identify the needs of the gaming ecosystem, and we will not hesitate to be very proactive to make basically the best technological offer to bring the best of the gaming experience to our players and developers.
Now, a lot of people, obviously, as you say, play games on their phone. It's a big business. People with 5G and cloud gaming, that's only set to expand and grow further. Some mobile phone manufacturers have started launching dedicated gaming handsets to try and fuel that excitement from gamers. Do you think we'd ever see a dedicated gaming handset from Huawei?
So it's not currently part of our plans, but as I said, our product team is always extremely enthusiastic about identifying new trends and satisfying the needs of the gamers community specifically. We know that gamers tend to be really at the forefront of innovation, and they have an appetite for excellent, top-notch hardware. So if we see that there is a gap in the market, we will not hesitate to fill it. But right now, it's not part of our plans.
And where do you think, if we had this conversation in a year's time, where do you think you would be in terms of, gaming on the App Gallery and gaming on mobile in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think definitely one of the key learnings from COVID-19 and the lockdown measures which have been taken by a lot of governments as a result of the global pandemic is that, over the last 18 months, we've seen an acceleration of gaming becoming the most mainstream form of entertainment. Basically, we see this market is becoming absolutely huge, $175 billion. It's a double of the sum of a movie and music put together. So by far the biggest form of entertainment. In terms of engagement as well, people spend much more time playing games and try much more games. And also something I want to insist on is that it's much more accepted nowadays to play games in terms of like social acceptability and perception. We've seen, for example, the WHO, the World Health Organization, going from, describing gaming as an addictive behavior a few years ago to the WHO, so the same organization, recommending, people to play games last year while they were in lockdown. And I think this comes from the fact that we've realized that gaming can really enhance cognitive behaviors and capabilities. We've also realized during the lockdown that gaming can bring people together and they can still socialize, but in a virtual way while staying safe at home. And finally, gaming can be a very positive experience, which allows us to entertain ourselves and to forget the sad reality of the pandemic. So I think thinking about like next year, I think we are going to see the continuation of gaming becoming more and more large. We've already spoken about the size of the market and the size of the audience. We have currently 2.8 billion players, but I believe there is much more untapped potential for the growth of the industry. We've discussed the improvement in terms of connectivity and devices, but there is also like more fundamental macroeconomic factors, like the fact that in developing countries you see more and more middle class having disposable income to spend on gaming. And we also, you know, we are seeing also the new kind of business models like subscription and cloud gaming, which will make access to gaming even more positive. So I think the future is very bright for anyone in gaming and specifically in mobile gaming.
The Mercedes EQ family first delivered at the premium end with the Mercedes EQC, broadly aligning with the GLC, while smaller model, the EQA, lines up against the GLA. Still with us? Good. Statistically, these cars all share a lot in common, from the exterior to the interior, with the EQA in one of the most competitive segments of the car market, with several notable electric rivals. So, can Mercedes EQA hold its own? The good news is that Pocalin editor Chris Hall has been driving one to find out and is here to tell us more. So, Mr. Hall, how's it been going?
Well, the first thing to say is if you're a fan of the GLA, you'll probably be a fan of the EQA in the way that they look, because they're very similar from the exterior. There's a couple of changes around the front and around the back so that you can glance at it and say, oh yeah, this is the electric version, the classic filling in the grille at the front. Mercedes seems to be trying to establish a new sort of style for its electric cars without going the whole hog and saying, right, we're going to do this on a brand new scale with looks that you've never seen before. So it's very familiar, and that familiarity continues when you get inside, because the inside of this car is essentially exactly the same as the regular version, the GLA. That's a good thing, because the GLA has a great interior. So this is an electric car with a high quality interior. Now, it's not quite the best that Mercedes do, because obviously Mercedes in their luxury cars go all the way up to spectacular in the interior. And it's obvious that the EQA is designed more as a family car. So the bottoms of the door panels are plastic, for example, so they're much easier to clean. You won't mind that you have your kids in the back kicking parts of it, because they're not going to be scuffing up the leather because it's plastic instead.
Yeah.
But with that said, the layout, the look of it, you know, it all comes together very nicely. And the thing that really stood out to me is the quality of the screens that you have inside, the resolution, the quality of the graphics and the user interface in general. It's a lot more sophisticated than many of the other cars out there on the market. So this is really what you're paying for. And to give you a couple of little examples of what you can do with it, there are two displays. They look like one long bar that's stretching around from behind the steering wheel round into the center of the car. And you know, in classic style, you have the center display and you have the driver's display, and each of these is customizable. But I really like the way that they've done this, because there are these little controllers that you get on the steering wheel, and they remind me of the BlackBerry optical navigator that you used to get on BlackBerries, like however many years ago it was, 5-10 years ago.
Oh, nice.
But they mean that you can move up and down and around and click to select things. So there are basically three sections of the driver display, you know, your classic two dials and a center panel. And you can change these to be whatever you want, scrolling through the different elements, you know, and you've got lots and lots of options, lots of information. It's all very rich and looks fantastic. So that's the thing that really stood out to me.
And from a driving perspective, how's it compared to, I mean, you've driven quite a lot of electric cars now. How does it compare on that experience?
Yeah, so that's where the experience changes slightly, because it has let's start with the battery. It has a 66.5 kilowatt hour battery, and that's not the biggest, especially when you compare that to the £45,000 price that you might be looking at. So you don't get a lot of battery for your money, but then I could only get about 3.5 miles per kilowatt hour out of it, which means that it's not hugely efficient either. So you'll get decent range. You might get 250 miles out of it if you're working hard to make it as efficient as possible. But there are a number of cars that are this size that will go further for less money. And that's not a great formula when people are worried about how far they're going to be able to get in their car. So I think the real takeaway here is that if you want a Mercedes, if you want something that has the quality and the interior that makes it a little bit more luxury, then the EQA is a great car to go for. But if you want the best range for your money, then you might find that from some rivals.
And in terms of overall, I mean, would you recommend this, or is there something on the market you think that offers, you know, better bang for buck or better luxury for buck compared to the Merc?
Well, in the luxury stakes, there aren't a huge number of competitors at the moment. There's the, BMW and Audi have similar size cars, and you may, you know, want to choose your preference between which you think has the best interior. There are models like the ID4, slightly larger, slightly cheaper, slightly better range, but not quite as sophisticated once you get onto the inside. So it's very much a case, as always, of trying it out, seeing what you fancy and what you really need, because for some people, they might want the luxury and the sophistication of that interior and that better interaction with the displays and everything else, and they may say, well, the range is absolutely fine to me, this is fine. The one exception that I would put on all of this is that if you haven't looked at the Hyundai Ioniq 5, which is their new model, brand new, it's only just coming out, this is a real change of direction for Hyundai. So no matter what you think of Hyundai cars and whether you've looked at the brand in the past, if you're thinking about getting a sort of crossover, small SUV style electric car, then you certainly should look at the Ioniq 5.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders that we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.